out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 16th of May, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com, of course. And I'm very pleased to say we are joined once again by a long-time nationalist, Eddie Morrison, who now wishes to be known as Eddie instead of Edmund. Eddie, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. Yes, I'm back to Eddie. I tried to be called Edmund for a week. I thought maybe now that I'm getting on in my years, I may be referred to as not sound like a gangster, but everybody insists on calling me Eddie, so I'll give that up as a bad job, and I'm now back to being Eddie. it'd have only confused the Reds.
Oh, yeah, I think most people know of you as Eddie Morrison anyway. They think Edmund Morrison.
I know about it. Yeah,
it sounds good. Sounds good.
Yes. Anyway, so we were talking about the early days of the NF, weren't we, last week?
Yeah. We talked about that meeting that you went to, and the Reds attacked it, and they smashed off a fuse box, and then you continued the meeting in the twilight. Yeah. And I think this week maybe we could talk about what went on from there, because the 70s were the real heyday of the National Front. And I'd like to really hear about demonstrations and marches. And I know that you've got an opinion on that, which may be slightly different to what people, or a lot of people are talking about today, about, you know, public demonstrations and that. And I believe there was another important one in Dewsbury, which was actually a British National Party one in July 1989. Both of those, I think, would be good to talk about. So let's start with the 70s and the National Front and the marches and the protests and what happened in that decade.
Well, I'll state my position on public marches and demonstrations and stunts The people who don't like doing those sort of things and are concentrating on elections all the time. I don't poo-poo elections. There is a time and place for elections. I don't think it's at the moment with the state of the British nationalist scene. But I know for a fact the National Front was built on stunts and marches and some fairly rumbustuous ones, shall we say, and some stunts. I remember some early stunts when we had about 8 or 10 NF women poured bags of flour over, I think it was the Home Secretary at the time, on an anti-paedophile demo. Now, some people in there thought, oh, you know, it's a bit close to assault and everything. But I remember the next day it was National Front flour bang, flour bomb, so-and-so, whoever it was. Sorry, a bit dim on the name on that one. But just give us an example. We, you know, from four or five bags of flour, we got national headlines, like, which was, to me, that was incredible. We did other things like there was a film about 72 called How I Won the War. It was a real anti-war pacifist thing. The CND were pushing it and everything. And Martin Webster took about 20 of us into the cinema. And halfway through, Martin gets up with a megaphone and interrupts the film where National Front slogans and denigrating our forces, denigrating our soldiers, and of course we all cheered in with NF. Anyway, we're escorted from the building after about 15 minutes by lots of policemen, and again next day front page newspaper advertisement. So we stood the general election in 1974, and I think there was one in 1970. The first one, we stood 10 candidates. So we weren't exactly avoiding elections. We were also standing in local elections, but that wasn't the focus. The focus, in fact, I've got to give top marks to Martin Webster on this one, because Martin Webster had it down to a fine art as an activist organiser. I've never met a better one. He knew that we had to pull some real stunts to kick our way into. Well, I think it's a famous saying of Martin's, we're going to kick our way into the headlines. I think that's true, is it not, Sven?
Yeah, what you're talking about there is using few resources to gather maximum exposure for the cost of a few bags of flour. Like the idea of standing up in the cinema and interrupting the film. I mean, that could be done with these Holo Hoax films. That could have been done with the film, supposedly of that David Irving trial that didn't tell the truth. When these films comes out, it would be a good idea to do something to make people aware of the fact that what they're being told is lies.
And again, you don't need many people to do it. Just a solid handful of people can do it. Another one, actually, taking you back a little bit, 1970, Springboks rugby match, South Africa versus England, and it was a big furor going on about whether they're going to be allowed in and we shouldn't be playing against them and all this sort of thing. So again, I have to keep mentioning Martin Webster on this one. Martin organised a demonstration at that rugby match. I'm fairly certain it was 1970, and about 50 of us went into the rugby match. We all had our tickets bought for us. I probably drained NF funds as it stood at the time. And we all stood up on the back row. And when the Springboks came on the field, Martin had issued us all with every two members with a large white sheet with a letter on it. And as they came onto the field, when everybody opened their sheets and it says, National Front supports Springboks, in like eight foot high, 10 foot wide sort of lettering. Like a huge, huge sort of banner display. And the police didn't try and take it down or anything. We held it up for a good half an hour or an hour, and at the end of the match we held it up again, and for the sake of 10 bed sheets possibly, we got again massive publicity from it. I remember the funny bit was coming out of the stadium. It would have been, I don't know where the rugby's in all these days, but anyway, coming out of the stadium, I was with Martin, and a fairly senior police officer came up to us and insisted on searching Martin because they'd arrived late and they weren't too happy about it. And they pulled this sheet that from Martin, and we had it under his coat, which had a huge W on it. And they said, right, what's this, Mr. Webster? Says, that's my monogrammed handkerchief. I thought it was a brilliant one-liner, you know. Yeah, but
you are going on for that. It's Jewish handkerchief for a huge nose.
It could have been, yeah. But anyway, it was a laughing minute. It really was good, was that? But as the marches, I mean, the first marches were 100, 150 people. But as we started getting this publicity and generating more members, because we had a slow start. I'd say they were maybe 150, 200 members by the end of the 60s. I may be wrong, maybe more than that. But certainly in the early 70s, we were up into, the 1,000 sort of mark. And we could really pull people out. We're pulling people on demonstrations in London, which at that time, most things activities were happening in London. But I noticed that marches were getting 200, 300 people on, and they looked impressive. We had the first flag corps started then, and the beginnings of the drum corps. So marches took on a much more impactful, can we say, if that's a word, thing to see and to be on. Number one, to be on one, it really, really raises your your awareness and your commitment and your pride. You know, you think, I'm marching here. I'm doing something here. You know, people are looking at me. People are taking notice of what we're about. And of course, the Reds then started the backlash with the counter demonstrations, and this did lead to some confrontation. But as opposed to what some people are saying, and they should know better after some of the years they've been in it, I'll mention any names in particular, but oh no, no, if there's any violence on a march, it will drive members away. It may drive one or two people away that were perhaps ex-Tory party or Monday Club or, you know, on the centre right, but then they weren't the people we were wanting anyway. We wanted the young folk and the people who, and the older ones, the ones who were willing to get up and give their support by being there. And secondly, because the newspapers and radio, the media in general, cannot avoid reporting violence. They actually love it. Now, I'm not saying we should go out there and cause violence. What we were doing in nearly every occasion was defending ourselves. It's the Reds that have always started the violence. But we defended ourselves, shall I say, very vigorously. I think that's a good way of putting it. And as the marches got bigger, the opposition got bigger, the violence got bigger, but there was still, apart from one or two people, the great majority of members were coming in because we were generating so much publicity, TV, radio, interviews with leading members were happening all the time. And Martin was doing what he said he was doing. We kicked our way into the headlines, literally. Sorry to any Reds who might have been injured in the process, but it's a long time ago. And this led up to the very famous 1974 Lewisham March, which I think, I know YouTube's got about a 7-part film of that match. If anybody ever wants to look it up, National Front Lewisham, I think it's about 7 parts, and we had about 500 to 600 members on there with drum corps, and the idea was to march through Lewisham, which, as you can imagine, Sven, was not exactly a pro-white area by that time, but we said we were going to march, and I was a steward on that march, and two or three of us stewards were detailed. We could hear this chanting and carrying on in the background from another street. So we went round from our march to have a look at what the opposition was like. And as far as the eye could see, all I could see was anti-fascists of every colour, hue and distinction you could think of. It looked pretty frightening. I went back and reported that and said, no, we still march. We never let the opposition stop us. We always marched. If the police tried to stop us, we may have done a reroute or something like that. But Lewisham in itself, what happened halfway through the Lewisham march, and you can see this on the YouTube film, the communists broke the march in half. At one point, there were smoke bombs coming in as bricks, bottles. I think there was even a couple of petrol bombs thrown. And I must admit, Sven, I was quite frightened. You know, it's only natural, isn't it, to be frightened in circumstances like that when people are praying for your death. And we reconnected the match. The police charged the demonstrators on horseback halfway through. And then we reunited the column up and we got to where we were going. A few people got arrested. A lot of people, mostly on the other side, the police say got injured. Must have been bricks that were bouncing off us and hitting them back. But, again, it proved our point that, we got publicity that went on for days. I mean, the Reds still talk. I think they've produced booklets, The Battle of Lewisham. It sometimes ways it rivals the old Cable Street thing of the black shirts, which I'm sure you know about.
How would you say it compares with the Unite the Right rally that was in Charlottesville last year?
I think the Unite the Right thing in Charlottesville was excellent, brilliantly organised. The torchlights did it. The fact that, you know, the torchlights and the night, and the fact that they were chanting the right slogans, but the American, no offense to our American cousins over there, but They've seen some violence. They've got AFA, Antifa over there, obviously. They've seen some violence against Trump meetings, and but they haven't seen anything on the scale of the violence we got in the United Kingdom. I don't think there's been much on that scale since perhaps the 1930s. We're on about, you know, massive brawls involving hundreds and hundreds of people. So the Charlottesville one was great, and I would encourage every American white nationalist to repeat that and keep going at it, because that's the way they're going to get publicity. Charlottesville proves it. You've just asked me about it. It's stuck in people's minds. Good example, Sven, straight away.
Well, I know Jason Kessler is organising a Unite the Right rally, part two in August. That's his attitude, is that you have to keep going against it. And you're right, it did produce masses and masses of publicity. There has been some unfortunate fallout from it, with people being arrested on trumped up charges and being found guilty of false charges, like Jacob Goodwin and others, and you know, hopefully they'll win on appeal. But you know, it did get the publicity, and as they say, you know, all publicity is good publicity. There is no bad publicity, because it gets the name out there, doesn't it?
Yeah, short of you know, something really, really bad like paedophilia, God help us. I can't think of anything that isn't good publicity, as long as you get your name mentioned. I think a prominent right-wing German leader said in the 1930s, I don't care what they say about us, as long as they're saying something. You know, they can call us anything. I mean, the name's racist and fascist and all this sort of business. They don't mean anything anymore. They're just political swear words that just bounce over people's heads now. But yeah, it's only a time now when there's not a lot happening. Although the NF is actually planning a march in July. I can't say through which city at the moment, Sven, because it's under wraps. But we're still going to march. We're not reliant on just the odd by-election now and again, which at the moment only goes to prove how weak the nationalist scene is in Britain. People getting 0.01% and things like that. It's laughable, if you don't cryable, actually.
Especially when compared to Europe. But just to take it back to this violence, I mean, throwing bricks and bottles and petrol bombs, like, that is a serious battle. Isn't it really?
That's
a battle.
When you actually see rains of bricks bouncing and hitting people as well. I mean, at Lewisham and other places, I saw NF members going down covered in blood, you know, as the bricks hit them. One old lady on a Bradford march in Manningham, that was about 74, 75, Elsie Barjak, no longer with us, but she was hit with a brick on the head from the anti-fascists, and it was a pretty dynamic-looking picture. She was there sort of sprawled in the road with St. John's Ambulance trying to sort of get around, and that made front page. They didn't publish anything about the march itself, photograph-wise. They published Elsie's picture of a National Front member on the floor with after being attacked by Reds, and the amount of sympathy that got for the NF, especially around the Bradford area, was incredible. Look what they've done to an old lady who's marching for a country. And, of course, we pumped that for more and more propaganda. I'm pleased to say she recovered for it, by the way. But
that's good.
Just
that's
shows you, you know.
Shocking.
You
think that would really be shocking to think.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think it'd be bad publicity, that, but it was a shock effect, you know. Shock value. You've got to give the press and the media news. You can't expect them to report anything if it's not interesting. And nothing's more interesting than, basically confrontations.
Well, what happened with this BNP one then? That's about 20 years later, isn't it? July 1989, Dewsbury. What was important about that one?
That was the NF had more or less got into a serious decline at that point. The BNP was started as, people may know, but 1982-83, John Tyndall broke away from the National Front, formed the new National Front. I went with him because I've always been a Tyndallite, and then we decided it wasn't really a name to run with the NNF. We called it the BNP, which there was a BNP in the 1960s, so it had already been used as a name, and it was a good name. But not very much. We used to call it the dreadful 80s. Between 82, 83 and right up to 89, the situation was like it is today. It was scattered. There was at one point there was an NF split in the NF, and there was, I think it was the Borough of Newham election. One section of the National Front contested the election at the same time as the other section did, which is just absolutely ludicrous.
So you had two National Front members stood for election in the same election in the same place?
Against each other. Madness. Yeah, one for the flag, National Front flag group, one as official National Front. Well, I mean, that's hitting rock bottom. So about 88, 89, I and others on the NF executive, sorry, BNP executive, said that, you know, we're going to have to do something to really liven things up. So I knew that from my experience in Leeds, most cities, and a lot of people don't know this, most cities and towns in Britain have a designated area that is protected for them to speak freely. In a lot of cities, it's not made known, but it goes back, in some cases, hundreds of years. I first picked up on it when I found out that by law, you can speak in front of Leeds Town Hall steps or on Town Hall steps without even actually informing the police, and you can hold the meeting there, which so actually we've done.
So it's like a speaker's corner, but in most towns that people and cities that people don't know about.
Yeah, Bradford's got one, which is corner of Foster Square. So I thought, well, at that point, the one place we had been doing well on was Dewsbury. Now, Dewsbury even today is a segregated city. You can draw a line down it. You can say Asians at one side, nearly all Asians, and at the other side, white indigenous people. And the situation in Dewsbury is still very, very tense. And at the time in the late 80s, there wasn't the grooming scandals that we've so unfortunately seen the last few years, but there was a lot of agitation. There's new mosques going up, and we started getting quite a few members. I spoke at some BNP meetings there that would have had four or five members a year before that were getting 30 and 40. So we thought we'd target Dewsbury for a public meeting, never mind a closed meeting. And I did find out a place, so just looking back in the records, that you were allowed to speak outside of the post office in Dewsbury. They couldn't refuse you a spot there. So I negotiated a Saturday in early July in 1989 with the police that we could have an open van there. It was like an open truck, and put speakers, megaphones and what have you up there, and we could advertise it and get some people along and have a public meeting. And I walked the area where we were going to have the meeting the week before with the deputy chief of police of Dewsbury, whatever his title was, and he says to me, well, how many people do you expect to get on this public meeting? I says, well, I'm hoping for as many as 40 people, which was very tongue-in-cheek because I knew the atmosphere was extremely tense. And then it didn't help that some unknown person sent a letter to the Bradford Telegraph up in Argus and said, the BNP meeting on Saturday, these terrible fascist types are going to burn the Quran in public. Well, of course, that did inflame a section of our Asian population, as you can possibly imagine. We didn't burn the Quran, with no intention of doing so, but whoever released that did us the favour of getting just about every opposition person you could think of in West Yorkshire pouring into Dewsbury on that day. When we arrived in the van with about 5 or 10 BNP activists to set the stall up and the speakers, there were already around 600 to 700 white lads and lasses waiting for the meeting. Massing up with there were already running battles in the city centre.
This was supporters. This was supporters and NF supporters.
NF supporters. Yeah, BNP supporters.
BNP supporters.
Stood up now. I just couldn't believe it. As far as I could see back, there were people chanting BNP, BNP, white power. lots and lots of lads. There were lots of lads. There were a lot of people couldn't get through the police barriers because they closed the. They said there's too many people in there already. I remember when John Tyndall arrived a little bit late. He jumped up onto the call it a platform with me, and he said, "Good God, Eddie!" He says, "I thought this was the opposition when we were coming past in the bus to get here." He said, "No, are these all with us?" I went, "Yes, happy to say they are." That was incredible. They let us speak for about 40 minutes. I spoke. Dave Bruce, I think Derek Beacon spoke, who remember as our first candidate to get elected in the 90s, and John Tyndall spoke, and they stopped the meeting about halfway through John Tyndall's main speech because the Asians had set fire to a white pub just up the road, and it was actually in flames. So imagine the situation. There was police helicopters above us. There was CNN. There were banks of media cameras from every. They stopped police leave all over West Yorkshire and brought police in. And then they closed the meeting. And the deputy police guard seen the week before, and I told him only 40 people might turn up. He was livid with me. He was down to think of something to arrest me for, you know, but he couldn't. And he said, "You told me so many untruths. This isn't a meeting. It's ended up in a major public order concern." And so I was, they brought out a legal thing banning me from entering Dewsbury for the next 7 days. Not that I wanted to anyway, considering what was going on. But the publicity, Sven, after that was just incredible. I got back home to my wife's sometime in the late Saturday afternoon, and I said, "Have we been on the TV?" She said, "You've never been off the TV." She says, "Whatever channel I switch to, there's a picture of you and the other BNP leaders stood on this platform with the masses and masses of people around you, and all the shops in Dewsbury closed their shutters down and closed up, so the whole town closed down, and the publicity went on for days and days, including interviews that John Tyndall did with TV and radio and other things, and lots of massive local publicity, and all the nationals picked it up, and then it went international with CNN. And I'm told, I can't remember the exact figure, that something like 1,000 inquiries came into BNP over the course of the next 2 weeks, applications for membership. So that took us from a party which was struggling even to be recognised in 88, early 89, that by July was on everyone's lips. Everybody knew about it, you know. "Did you hear about the BNP, Dewsbury? Who are they being?" "Oh, yeah, we saw that." One thing I use in speeches many times just to illustrate one very unfortunately violent thing that happened with lots of confrontation. We were the good guys, as we usually were, got us. If you couldn't put a price on the amount of propaganda, publicity we got, had we been paying Saatchi and Saatchi, not that we would pay them anything, but if we'd have probably spent £5 million in advertising to get the sort of coverage we did. As it was, because it's £28 for the hire of the van. So that's a case in point for you.
Again, that's making use of resources for the hire of a van, and you can put a PA system in there, so you've got loudspeakers so people can hear. And from what you say, I mean, these areas must still be there in all the cities and the towns.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
So, this is ideas that people, you know, that listeners should be thinking about.
Yeah, again, you don't have to have many people there. Obviously, you've got to use yours. I wouldn't advise anyone to have one in Electric Avenue in Brixton, for instance. That'd be rather dangerous. But there are plenty of other places, not only in London, but if local organisers or nationalists in their own towns, I don't know, Peterborough or the home counties or wherever, you will find more than likely there is a speaker spot. Take advantage of it. Get a few people along there. Take a megaphone. And you'll get some publicity. It may be small, it may be local, or it may be big. But if you don't do it, you won't get anything.
Is there footage of this meeting available on YouTube anywhere, do you know?
The BNP rally in Dewsbury. Yeah. I've not seen it as I don't think it was videoed. Not like the Lewisham one was. There are mentions of it. I think there are some sharp videos about it. And
I'm just thinking of news reports from the time. There might be copies of it somewhere.
Oh, if you googled Dewsbury BMP 1989, if any listener wants to do that, just Google British National Party meeting Dewsbury 1989, and stacks and stacks of information will come up. And if you look on the images on Google, there'll be lots and lots of images of the meetings as well. So yeah, it's there for people to read. It is in the archives. But I always think that one particular meeting, for very very little layout on BNP's money, we changed from being a little party into a small but threateningly large party, which, of course, as the 90s wore on, before the advent of Mr. Griffin, we got Derek Beacon elected in East London, Tower Hamlets, and we were really on the move, because the week after that we had another meeting in Darlington, which on a smaller scale still generated stacks of publicity in the North East and got the North East BNP up and rolling. Younger people do not want to come to a political meeting to listen to what they expect from the old parties, Tory, Labour, whatever. Old politicians droning on about things. They want to come either to, even indoor meetings should be lively, there should be the music there should be lots and lots of banners. Or if they go to a public meeting, or if they're on a march, then they feel like it's something. They're after excitement, you know. They're not after boring, long lecturing meetings where they just basically get bored stiff with somebody talking about the economics of the fishing industry, no matter how important that might be. But the youth that we need, and it is the youth that we need, the generations we need, they want to see some action. And I think we've proved it.
Definitely. Got to keep it lively. Eddie, I mean, it's been really great hearing about all this. And hopefully over the next coming weeks, we'll hear about the election of Derek Beacon and more of the meetings and the protests and the rallies. Because we can learn so much from this. We can learn so much from you. So I'm really pleased that you're coming on here and you're doing this with me. But we'll have to finish for today. So I'll say thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.